Good morning. You're listening to Cohen Meander. I woke up this morning with a larger thought in my mind. In the past of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it was necessary for people of this belief to congregate together. In fact, it was encouraged. There was a gathering and a almost kind of a communitarian sort of life. In fact, I think that is one of the things for which the church is known. So much so that the largest splinter group that broke off from the early church focused strongly on this. In fact, changing its name not only to get some distance from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they were called the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for over 100 years. Only in the past 25 or so have they changed their name to Communities of Christ, which very much focuses on what they felt was a unifying theme from the past, because in the past it was important to to gather. There was always a gathering. I just came off of a church history tour, which was very interesting, and I learned a lot. During, I would say predominantly the first half of the church's existence, we're coming up on the 200th anniversary of the church, which will happen in 2030. That it was still a preached and needed doctrine still to gather to Utah, join the saints to be a part of a LDS community. And that this, as far as I'm aware of, this was to help what I guess I would call the pioneer church, to get strength, gather strength from each other. I just watched a very interesting, video. I don't think this is precisely from a group that is Latter-day Saint, but it was about DNA, genetics, and that Latter-day Saints, Mormons, when I tend to speak culturally about such people, I say they're Mormons. I am not a Mormon. I didn't come out of that culture. I don't very well subscribe to any culture particularly. I don't really fit in with anybody. It's not like, oh yes, well he does this because this is what his people have always done. And they go, I don't know that. Of course, I really haven't had that independently analyzed by somebody else. Regardless, that there is definitely a Mormon, almost genotype. And it went through all of the things, it has the most in common, I think, with, what did they say, Nordic? With Nordic groups? Not surprising, a lot of the early members of the church came out of, Preston, England area. Over time, missionary work grew in other places, Scandinavia. I don't think so much in Germany, but I'm not saying that people couldn't join the church in Germany. When people have tried to lump groups together culturally, and I take a look at maps of this lumping, it seems like it's an interesting thing. There is a distinct New England sort of group, and then the same color, you know, to indicate a similarity, is this big old dollop around Utah. And you go, because a lot of the sensibilities were born of Joseph Smith and of the first people who joined the church initially that really gave it its color and flavor when you converted to the belief system that very heavily featured the prophet Joseph Smith. That brought along with it a very New England ethic to it. When people came over to the United States as part of a Mormon migration, they were mostly coming to join a community that was already formed around New England-ish congregational church mindset. Each individual community tended to have a church and tended to subscribe to a certain religious group. People get upset about that because, oh no, there's religious freedom here. And you go, that's true. Some people are very upset now because very anti-American, very, very anti, you can call it Christian, which strangely enough is quite open. I always find it interesting when people say that Christians are really closed-minded. And you go, well, let me tell you, the Muslims are coming, and the Muslims are doing a good job of, a term for it would be infiltrating, Western ideas. They're actually taking advantage of Western ideals. They're really creating some very strong pockets of anti-Americanism, for lack of a better term for it. That's not what this is about. I'm just giving that as kind of an example of the influence that communities can have. Now, this doesn't work particularly well for missionary work, especially in the modern day. for the LDS Church because there's not this strong doctrine about the gathering. There definitely was at the time. There definitely still is in the literature. Because we don't tend to excise our literature. If you want to know what Latter-day Saints thought about plural marriage, it's still all in the literature. We didn't change, like the Doctrine and Covenants, and the sections that spoke of plural marriage. They're still there. We don't now practice it. In fact, it is heavily punished with the LDS Church if you try to practice it. No, there is no polygamy tolerated in the church today. Anyway, although many Mormons, remember my split, there's Mormons who subscribe to kind of a communitarian culture of Latter-day Saints. There are some, and I call them Mormons, and that offends some of them. The church is right now having some legal issues, saying that other groups cannot use the word Mormon. I don't have that problem. I don't subscribe to that particular view that the LDS Church owns the Mormon trademark, although it very well might. Other parts of the world use the same ascribing, even though I don't. I make a distinction. Doesn't matter. Except that it kind of does. In what I woke up thinking about this morning, the church has really been walking away from the kind of communitarian Mormonism that used to prevail. When I went on this trip, the predominant group of people were Mormons. People that were either from Utah or from kind of the Utah, it's not Utah, I used to call it the Jell-O Belt, because there had actually been studies done, and the biggest places where Jell-O is most prominently eaten and consumed is in the area around the state of Utah. Hilarious. Kind of a Mormon thing. And so I used to call it the Jell-O Belt. Now I think I'll call it the Mormon Sphere, which is predominantly Utah, up into Idaho, and western Wyoming. There are swaths of Arizona, mostly on the western side of Arizona, into New Mexico, just a bit. There wasn't a lot of New Mexico colonies. Early in the church, Brigham Young, who was the leader of the LDS Church at the time when they went to Utah, formed Latter-day Saints into groups. Well, once they got to Utah, they didn't stop there. Often Brigham Young would say, pack up your wagons and all your stuff. You're going up to, it even goes up so far as the southern part of Alberta in Canada. And, and that this was Mormon land. Anyway, so he sent them up there. So these places exist. There is a whole swath of the West, including parts of Nevada, that are predominantly, that when you go there, you go, this place is really different. You go, yeah, this is a Mormon colony. founded by Mormons. You know, all of a sudden you see a Mormon church is a prominent fixture in that place. In those days, the LDS church was, the church building itself that was built was usually the most prominent building in that locality. And it was the community centers, everything else. The called and assigned bishop, which is a calling in the LDS church, was often looked at as somewhat of the mayor of that community. Now, that's not, these things don't exist anymore because, of course, you know, as these places became more integrated with the United States, other people moved there and felt and built up their own churches, and they became very standard looking places, except with a really heavy Latter-day Saint influence, probably due to politics, just because there were so many Latter-day Saints that remained there. I was saying that, because when we went on this LDS church history tour, and we would say we were from New Mexico, the thing that would immediately come to these people's minds are Farmington, Kirtland. There is a large bit of northeastern New Mexico. There's a temple there now. That were Mormon colonies. There were some down further south. There's one called Alma. There's an Alma, New Mexico, and that's a Mormon colony. There's Rhema, which is a Mormon colony, and that was the picture they had in their heads. That we had come from a Mormon colony and said, no, we're from the other side of New Mexico. And of course they were, you know, everybody was nice and kind. It's not like they were bad people or something. But they certainly had this view of this stuff. I had written, guy, how many years ago? Probably about 5 or 6 years ago, if not 10. I had written a missive. You know, it probably could be called a missive. I don't know if I really do essays, formal essays anymore. I don't think anybody does formal essays anymore. Regardless, they teach it in school, and I used to be a tutor in college, and it was mostly about writing essays. And I would go through the whole form and how you're supposed to, anyway, it doesn't matter. Pardon me. I had written this thing, and it was mostly about how I had observed the fact that many of the people where I had lived in eastern New Mexico and West Texas, when it came time for their children to find spouses, mostly boys going to find wives or girls trying to find a husband, it doesn't matter either way, they would ship them off to their families in Utah, and that's where they would find their spouses. I would call it, you know, those guys going back to the mothership. And it wasn't that I was being a complimentary thing. I was being somewhat upset. I don't think there is a strong separation between Mormons from Mormon land and what a lot of people would consider to be converts. It was very interesting when I first came to where I live now, Tucumcari, it was very much a convert, a congregation of converts. Almost everybody was a convert. Most of them locals, but a few people from other places. We would occasionally have Mormons come through. You know, I was born in Utah. I went to school in Utah. I'm a graduate of Brigham Young University. You'd have a few people that were a little bit rebellious and went to the University of Utah. But, you know, you could almost predict their life thing. When they came to Tucumcari, they were having their quote missionary experience. You know, I'm going out away from home and having a little experience out here. But you know, they would say, well, it says I'm going to do that. And then if it could be retirement, it could be for any other reasons, things go badly. And they would go skittering back to Utah. And certainly when it came time to choose mates, oh no, you better go to Utah and do that, you know. Mostly it would be, I'm going off to BYU. Because that's where Mormons go to school. For college. At least for their baccalaureate degrees. And I had written this whole thing about, you know, it says, you know, I don't want to come off and say people think that Latter-day Saints from other parts of, from away from Utah are kind of like second-class citizens in the church, but they kind of are, at least from Utah. But I had seen it. It was quite... It was a trend. It was what people did. That's not to fault them. It's a cultural thing. I just noticed it. And I said something about it. And my big thing in that, you can call it an article. The big thing in that article was that I think, I said, if you're really interested in spreading the gospel all over the world, doing the missionary things is not bad, but actually making sure that we spread the gospel all over the world, maybe we need to do a reverse gathering. That you leave Utah and you don't go back. You try to integrate yourself into the culture of wherever you go. That way people will see you as a native and it won't be some foreign belief system. The sad part is now it's become a ward now. It used to be a branch, different sizings of congregations in the LDS Church. It very much became, most of the original converts in Tucumcari weren't prominent in the local congregation anymore, weren't very, or had died, or had all moved off or something. And what had become the new, we had left to go and seek our fortune elsewhere, my family, me and my kids, and when we came back, which I found intriguing, the convert nature of our group, of our congregation, had completely changed. You don't see this in other churches as far as I'm aware of, just because of their nature. But the Latter-day Saint Church, this happened to us. It became a very Utah expatriate church. And I had often spoken about, because, you know, I had done my mission in Utah. And I had this sense that many Mormons treated the church as the Utah cultural center. This was where they could come and where they felt comfortable, where they had their happy culturalisms and things like that. And the place where I had lived a good chunk of my adult life had all of a sudden changed radically. And now it was a Mormon expatriate church. It was just it's predominantly a really good place for Mormons who are traveling across the country. They stop, they come to our church, and they come and they feel so good, they'll even get up if it's fast and testimony meeting, the first Sunday of every month. A lot of people call it open mic Sunday, because it ends up kind of being like that. And people get up and they'll say how wonderful it is that wherever they go in the world, they can go and they go to an LDS church and it just looks exactly like, it's just like dropping back into Utah, and they get so warm and snuggly, and they talk about how that's a wonderful aspect of church. Wherever you go, we're all on the same lesson. We're all talking about the same things. And anyway, I have found, so yes, it says, and I've got some hang-ups about this. I am not much of a cultural, number one, I'm not a Mormon, therefore, I'm not much of a culturalist about it. You know, I'm not here trying to give them a cultural experience, although I now live in a unit of the church. I live in a church congregation that has now become, again, just like every place else, many other places, that's become this congregation's primary role, is to feed on that culturalism. Make those people feel good. Anyway, so I woke up today. I'm finally getting around to that about the half hour mark. And I said, and I've thought this so many times, but I've never really talked about it particularly, about how one could interface with the church without turning it into their culture thing. Now, in joining the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, there are some practices you have to adopt. Most of them having to do with the word of wisdom. So no coffee, no tea. They've kind of changed the definition of it. And that has apparently become a rule, although I think it's more of an acculturated rule than anything else. You know, no coffee, no tea, no illicit drugs, no tobacco, things like that. It was made really plain by, well, I, you know, it's just all over the culture. Latter-day Saints don't even really see it particularly. And saying you are supposed to throw down whatever loyalties you had in the past and adopt this new culture's loyalties. A big thing about when you, back in the old days, you would leave your old country and come to America, and you are expected to adopt American culture. Let me tell you, if there's a group that is more American, almost kind of an enforced Americana, it's going to be Mormons, because it became part of the religion of gathering that you would gather to the United States of America, and you would drop whatever you had in the past. Now that's become less and less. But yes, Utah people and Mormons specifically are incredibly American, loyal Americans to the end. Now, it works for me because my culture, the cultures that I arise from, are strongly American as well. Fought in the wars. I especially care about liberty. My family, who is English, Irish, Scottish, and then there is this, I call it the skunk stripe, of Jewishness. That's where my skunk stripe comes from, on top of my head. is my Jewish patch. Anyway, to be a good Latter-day Saint without having to be Mormon, eating a lot of green Jell-O with carrot, little carrot pieces in it, funeral potatoes, those kinds of things. Did you have to adopt all that stuff? Or was it mostly trying to put the gospel in its proper place? Instead of it being kind of a thing where you kind of wrapped yourself around it. My poor wife, Lisa, has struggled mightily, and I think she has especially struggled mightily because she doesn't have a lot of LDS friends, but she doesn't get out much. Therefore, it's the only kind of social place that she has to kind of do things. I feel bad because I tore her from her. I didn't tear her from. She left the culture that she grew up in. Although she didn't get along very well with those people either. But she married the poor guy that doesn't fit in anywhere. You know, I'm not a rancher, which was. My mother's family was mostly ranchers and farmers. My dad's family were predominantly Scotch Presbyterians. And then my grandmother married my grandfather, who was there is no concept of a lapsed Jew, but there was, but his background was strongly Jewish. But he was just this, you know, if I have any cultural, ties, I'd have to say it's probably to my grandfather, who I just barely knew, but was really kind of a, you know, just doing what it took. Anyway, that one could be a good Latter-day Saint without adoption into Mormonism, the Mormon culture, which I have avoided. I did some time in Utah. I wasn't interested in getting wrapped up in that Utah thing, so I just didn't. It would be like being a convert to Judaism. It wasn't really your background, and trust me, to be Jewish is to wrap yourself in Jewish culture. Because they have just been driven out for everywhere there are. Mormons have that in their background, but they've had such strong communitarianism since then that I don't think, you know, I don't really know where to take this. Except to say I'm trying to find the place where I could be a good Latter-day Saint, yet not be the cultural sort. I was really very much a convert to the Book of Mormon. I don't know what exactly was the conversion factor for my father. I've talked to him about it. I might talk to him again about this. He was the first member of my family to join the church or to be introduced to the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's why it's kind of like the whole funny thing of the way we phrase it is may even be probably somewhat, I don't want to call it inappropriate, but it bleeds this Utah culturalism. You know, they joined the church. And you go, I find that problematic in that, let me tell you, my church has changed, you know, as I've moved from place to place and the church changed. You get kind of a preference. I liked this congregation. I wasn't too big about this congregation. Stuff like that. I guess my church really changed a lot in that the place where I had spent the most of my, of the growing up years of my children, that place doesn't exist anymore. I call it the Tucumcari Branch. It's got a little bit a few of the attributes of it, but by and large it doesn't anymore. You know, that's just not the place where it was done. It's not a convert church anymore, where people told stories of how they were converted to the gospel. Where did you get your testimony from? And it's obvious when you go sometimes to these open mic Sundays that are supposed to be testimony meetings. and talk about your experience of learning about that the church was true. And you'll notice that these people don't have that, or at least if they don't, they sure are not talking about it. And it's interesting for people who end up going to a place that's predominantly Mormon expatriates. Well, they move to Utah for some reason. You know, they get all told, oh, you need to send your kid to BYU. You know, missionaries will still kind of talk that up and say, you know, you really need to go to school at one of those places. And they're just around people that it's like, well, I'm just doing what my family's already done. And I'll be honest, a lot of, you know, I listen to a lot of LDS-ish YouTube channels mostly. And this doesn't get talked about there because mostly these people are Mormons, which means their basic attachment to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is because of their Mormon heritage. This is the belief of their parents. We're seeing a lot of this in other churches too. Other churches are very much about, you know, this is the belief of my fathers, faith of our fathers. We will be true to thee till death. And it's like, oh my goodness, that must really hearten Latter-day Saints, except that when they go out into the world and people poo-poo them, they are much less likely to be strong in the face of that. They will tend to walk away from it. So I think it's really important that when you talk about your testimony, you talk about how you joined the church. Not how you joined the church. How you finally attached yourself to the gospel. You don't want to be, you know, you don't want to tear people apart by not having a very particular experience. You know, Joseph Smith's first vision kind of experience. Part of this trip that I went on. Because a lot of people do not have a distinct conversion story. Like my dear wife does not have a distinct conversion story like I do. Except that she can say what she did. And it's sad to say, a lot of Mormons don't really have a testimony of Joseph Smith as a prophet, don't really have a testimony of the Book of Mormon as the word of prophets and apostles, and a record of Jesus Christ coming to the American continent. A lot of them don't have that. They often don't get that until much later in life. Many of them get it on their mission for the boys, and I guess for the girls too. Except that going on a mission is something, well, you can't say. Mormons get their testimonies on their missions when they really have to teach people about people who aren't Mormons about Joseph Smith, about the Book of Mormon, about the concepts of the gospel of Jesus Christ that have been restored. Things like that. It's really interesting. That's why when people say, oh, you know, a lot of people fall away from the church when they're teenagers or when they're young adults. And you go, yes. And they all say, well, it's not because I didn't have a testimony. And you go, oh, I'm pretty sure it was. You couldn't withstand outside cultural pressures. If for some reason, you know, this often happens when they get a new peer group in college or at school that kind of gives them a hard time, especially when they leave Mormondom. It's like Christendom. It's kind of like, say, I became a born-again Christian. And you go, that's interesting. It says that's a Christendom. Well, it's actually Pentecostal, I think. You know, it's kind of a Pentecostal conversion story when this really started to become an active part of my life. And you go, yeah. It says I get that. And taking those kinds of terms and adding them to your lexicon. That's what joining the church is for Latter-day Saints. The problem is a lot of people get that conflated with becoming a Mormon. Listen, yeah, says I never became a Mormon. I got a snoot full of Mormon culture from. Well, can I be honest? I said I wasn't really into Utah as a missionary in Utah because it smelled too much like this is what you do when you come to Utah. If you want to integrate with the local culture. If you want to be successful in the local culture, I remember having stories. I didn't ever do this because it just, I don't know why, I just didn't. But, I'd heard stories that there were people that joined the Mormon church so they could get a promotion at work. That's a cultural reason to join, you know, and it was a strange animal. I was never into that, although it was a major feature of a lot of people who got baptized, was that they kind of wanted to be part of the in-group. So they were. And then my parents got divorced, and my dad ended up moving to Utah and meeting a lady up there, a divorcee, and a lot, just as he was, and them joining, and them getting married, and my dad staying in Utah, or in a Mormon colony, not exclusively. My father went to where the opportunities were. Not a bad thing to do. But he ended up in Utah when push came to shove. His wife, his wife's multi-generational Mormon culturalism, he decided to honor that. And so they went to they set up shop in Utah. They've been there ever since. My brother went to BYU, met his wife there, and they've been pretty much living a Utah lifestyle ever since. So I've been thinking about this whole thing. There's a lot of people that say they're expos. And you go, ah, he says, they're actually more true. They're speaking more truth than they know. They have basically walked away from the culture now. Often, it's a case of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. In a very strong sense, they just didn't want the LDS culture anymore. No, sorry, the Mormon culture anymore. They quit the Mormon culture, but it was so tied together with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that that's what they did as well. Was that they rejected both. And you go, it's not about that, guys. Anyway. So yeah, I guess that's what I was trying to come up with here. This is not an anti-Mormon. I'm just not a Mormon. It says, although I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But that's a requirement for me to follow the faith that I adhere to. Anyway, I'm nearly to my destination. So I'm get to work. So, I need to let this go. I may have other things about this, but yes, I am not a Mormon. I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's a weird separation. I'm not a cultural Jew. I don't hang out with other Jews. You know, everybody says the whole thing of, well, there are practicing Jews, and then there are these weird cultural Jews that just do Jewish things because they've always done Jewish things. It doesn't mean anything to them. I think I will accept, and I don't, but I don't really plead that I'm an ethnic Jew, although that would probably be the closest association to that, is to say that I am an ethnic Jew. But I do put great stock in the fact that I am a priest of the Aaronic order. I'm not a Levite. Probably because the vast majority of my background is somewhat of Ephraim. So yeah, I may have to delve into this more so that I can come to a better understanding so that I don't, because I don't want to get into the Mormon culturalisms. This is not my background. Like Trex, Mormons love going on treks, which is a reenactment of going from Nauvoo, Illinois to Utah. In fact, in this, let me tell you, this church history tour has probably informed me more about what I'm talking about than anything else, because I was definitely among a lot of Mormons. Not exclusively, but a lot of Mormons on this trip. And, and that was an important part. Boy, at the very end of our experience, it was called the Trail of Hope, which was after all these times when the first followers of Joseph Smith, after he was martyred, after he was killed, and they had to leave Illinois too, as they had to leave every other place because their belief system just could not be tolerated. And their communitarianism could not be tolerated in Missouri or Illinois. And a big part of many of these people's background and what they find so interesting is this trek across to Utah, which is a place where they could go, where they could live the way they wanted to live and be the people they wanted to be. And it's interesting because that isn't a common experience with other people, although there has been great attempts made to say, oh yes, you are just like those pioneers. And you go, no. They said, I stayed where, you know, I still live in the city that I was born in, for instance. Even though I converted to the Latter-day Saint faith. So it's a different experience because it didn't get very communitarian. You know, it just felt like you were going to this different church, that's all. And although you might get picked on for your beliefs, and that was something that you wouldn't have if you went to Mormon land. Anyway, so yeah. It's hard to separate the Mormons from the Latter-day Saints. They converge a lot. You know, if you had a Venn diagram, people love, oh, this makes us so much smarter when we do this. And it's like, I'm sorry, I just don't see it. It's like that social science stuff, which is like, this is mostly garbage. Anyway, so there's that. Thanks for listening to the Cohen Meander. I'm Jason Nimmer. Have a great day.